Hi, my name's Sean Taylor. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek of YouTube and Blue Ski fame. And welcome to Avatar The Last Podcasters. This week we're going to do another episode revisited, only it's going to be just a hair different this time for obvious reasons that we will get to. But before we do that, Chris, how are you? What have you been up to?
I am doing good. Recently, I went to go see the new Superman movie, and I really liked it. Not a love yet. Not to say, like, oh, I'm giving the movie benefit of the doubt. It just happens to me with movies sometimes that I change my opinion on them. Batman Begins. It's my favorite movie of all time. First time I watched it, I liked it. And now I love it, and it is my definitive favorite movie of all time. So I might love this movie more. Might like it less. I doubt that. But anyway, really like the movie. Really get Superman right. Not to say that other movies didn't get Superman right. This movie gets Superman more right.
Writer.
And to defend those other movies like the Snyderverse and stuff, Man of Steel, I think Man of Steel is like clearly better than this movie. Man of Steel is a 10 out of 10 to me. I wouldn't change really a single thing about that film. I think the film is amazing and it's great. But this one is like a better Superman movie. Like if you want to get an idea of what Superman is, what he stands for, what he means in his 80 something years of existing, almost 90, then this is the film to watch.
I need to go back and watch Man of Steel because I've probably only seen that movie one time. I remember liking it, but then just, you know, every time I hear you say it, like a 10 out of 10 movie, I need to pay better attention, I guess. I will say, it's pointless to rate something in kind of a casual sense, like it didn't have to be a literal rating, but it's impossible to like put a finite like review or thought process on like a movie or something. And then if you come back to it 10 years later, and if that's still the same, have you changed as a person? Like, did you grow? Did you experience anything? Not that it can't be the same number, but if your feelings on that movie haven't changed a little bit, what'd you do in your 10 years?
You know what? That's actually really interesting, especially we talk about the episode topic right here, talking about Bottle of the Water Tribe. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm transitioning yet, but like, BVS. I liked Batman vs. Superman the first time I watched it. Mm-hmm. Second time I watched, I loved it. I watched a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, man, I do not like the first half of this movie, like, at all.
Well, it's a like, long watched, movie, too. That's a big, like...
So there's two versions of the film, because Zack Snyder does this for some reason. there's a theatrical version, and then there's the ultimate cut of it.
I think Zack Snyder played Pokemon as a kid, and he's like, well, we gotta have the red version and a blue version, and then the yellow version. That's the good one.
So I watched Ultimate Cut before, and I was like, this doesn't make the movie any better. And I recently talked to other Batman fans. Many Bat fans consider the Ultimate Cut way better. Like, oh, it clears up these plot points and stuff. And I'm like, it makes the movie 30 minutes longer, and it makes Batman even more murderous than he was already. And those were two of the things I hated in the film. Granted, like, subjectively, that's a subjective thing on the Batman killing mercilessly thing. It shouldn't really impact. The thing is, it does, though, because Batman shouldn't, to me, it makes no sense that Batman doesn't have a no-kill rule in that movie. It would make more sense if Batman had a no-kill rule, right? Like, sure, he still does he's still dangerous, of course, still breaks bones and stuff. But it'll make more sense if he had a no-kill rule, except for Superman, because he sees in his head Superman is not a human. Like, I have to, like, he is disassociating himself.
This is not a person who's a threat to other persons. This is a alien entity who's a threat to all humans simultaneously.
He is an it. And then, the end of that, you know, fight, the whole Martha thing, which I think is brilliant, honestly. I've never had any issue with that. I think people blow that out of proportion way too much.
They do blow it out of proportion. I'm not going to let it slide and say that it's fine. Like, it's a little soft.
I think it's one of the brilliant things. Because throughout, no one in comic in the 80s and the years these characters existed has connected those dots that Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent's mother shared the same name. Like, we all knew that, but none of us, like, was like, oh, isn't this an interesting thing? And Zack Snyder was like, hey, someone didn't realize this. Maybe. I'm going to make it the focal point.
Maybe the answer to the question is, no, it's really not that interesting. Chris, I know 30 Marthas, I swear.
But these two, so anyway, that moment humanizes Superman to Bruce, so then he decides not to kill him. Batman has already been killing, he's killed like 30 people before this. It makes that arc less impactful. Yeah. Anyway, so now when I watch, so recently I watched the Ultimate Edition of it because through the recommendations of other Batman fans, when I watched it, I was like, I don't know if it's because of the Ultimate Edition or it's because the first half of the movie is just so, it just
wasn't that movie already 2.5 hours long. Before the 30 extra minutes?
Yes, yeah. So
I'd like to go on record saying I haven't watched the Ultimate Edition. I probably should just to do it because I haven't seen the movie in a long time. I'm okay with BVS. I will. We had the conversation with John on one time, and I really enjoyed it, of our favorite, like, Batmans. I'll say that Batman, yeah. Ben Affleck Batman, seems like the biggest waste of potential because of all the Batmans.
He
looks like a guy who could be a Playboy billionaire and beat the shit out of you. He looks like both the one biggest, what's above qualm, the one biggest gripe, whatever's above qualm, issue.
Ooh, we don't have gripe in there, but we gripe don't
know. Maybe gripe's under qualm. I can't decide. One above qualm. So maybe it's gripe with the latest Batman movie is just that the way, like, Robert Pattinson could play both sides well, but he doesn't have any Playboy billionaire-ness to him, to me.
They didn't go for it. They went for the secluded loner.
But I really like playing both. Yeah. I really like it when and so Ben, I maintain that Ben Affleck is like the biggest wasted potential. Because nobody's scared of Michael Keaton. Like, I don't look at that guy like that guy could beat me up.
That guy was wearing a black turtleneck with jeans on, and
I could push that guy over a ledge right now, and he wouldn't even put up a fight. It's the curly head. I don't know why it is the curly hair, and that's just one of those. So, but I haven't seen BBS in years, so maybe I should just go and watch one or the other, to see.
That movie probably did. In retrospect, I think that movie killed the DCEU, as it's called, because. It's like, well, one thing, why would you kill... One thing, I hate how Snyder fans are like, oh, end of... Like, Zack Snyder was giving it to us at the end of... You know, he was giving us everything fans claim they want, like a Superman more hopeful and stuff. It's like, or in a Batman so-and-so. I'm like, well, he had three movies, which is... It's in a total of, let's say, 2, 3, 5... Like, 9 or 10 hours to tell whatever story you want to tell.
A lot of screen time.
And he told the story he wanted to tell. And that's not the story a lot of fans want.
I would say, and I did not like Jesse Eisenberg in that role whatsoever. It's a weird fit to me.
Yeah. He would have been a great Riddler. If you just said, that's the Riddler.
Better Riddler. Yeah. That's a good, that feels a way more natural fit to me personally. More natural than, say, Jim Carrey, for example. Which, people, you know, we tease like Batman and Robin, the movie a lot, and most people did, rightfully so. But it wasn't all that long ago. Like Gio's definitely here, and I tried to watch that. Maybe I was given blood or something, like if it was on TV. Batman Forever, the Val Kilmer one, with Jim Carrey's Riddler. That's a really hard watch also. It's a difficult one to go through.
I think Batman and Robin is way harder.
It is.
Like, they're both... Like, it's kind of like when people put Dragon Ball Evolution in the same vein as The Last Airbender.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, no. Dragon Ball Evolution is so much worse. than The Last Airbender. Like, it's, to me, there are some redeeming qualities to The Last Airbender. Also, that it is essentially telling the same story as book one. Like, they didn't deviate that much story-wise. Sure, the actors suck.
Yeah. They picked there. Some weird things to deviate from.
But Dragon Ball Evolution is like, it doesn't feel like Dragon Ball Z at all. Like, it's not Dragon Ball Z. It's
Last Airbender is what I would describe as a very bad movie. Dragon Ball Evolution, you could make a decent case to me, at least in my limoscope, that is the worst movie of all time, and I wouldn't have a great comeback to that story.
Sorry, if you said
it's a theatrical release.
Yeah, if a movie with at least $50 million budget.
Yeah,
it might be the worst.
You could make a pretty good case, and I wouldn't be able to be like, well, what about this movie? Because I can't think of one right now, Chris.
Honestly, even the Sony, like, Spider-Man villain movies, yeah, those are better than Dragon Ball Evolution.
I am not familiar enough to know for sure, but at a glance, I'd be like, I'll take my chances, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, we do need, you and John had great opinions on Superman, and I need to, Heather's watching through those movies while she breastfeeds on your HBO Max upstairs. Because she wanted to watch everything else before she watched the latest Superman movie. And so she's watching through. Yeah. So I should watch through, and we should pull John in and do a little one-off episode. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
When I said one-off episode, it turned into like two-hour fiascos. Yeah.
But we're apparently going to argue about Superman because John hated it.
But is
which
there...
I'm not funny. I think I love disagreeing with people because I love disagreeing with people that I love having different opinions from people that I respect and that are friends of mine because we have good conversation.
John's an easy guy to have that kind of. There's plenty of people where I don't want to talk about anything that we disagree on because I just want to talk to those people. But talking about Superman with John, I'm sure I'd be completely fine with that. We did it, but that was fun when we did the Batman, where I feel like we do every single Batman movie made?
It started off as just reviewing the Batman. Then we did like a one-off like 15-minute part where we ranked all the Batman movies.
Because I've since changed my opinion a little bit on Batman Returns for the better while we're talking about growing as people. At the time, we were all iffy, think like, all right, well, people like it more than it deserves because DeVito and Walken and all that stuff. And we all said, but it is weirdly horny. Yeah. And it is. It's a weirdly horny movie. But that it's one, it is. But I did go back and watch, and I found it more enjoyable. I think in the time Gio was here, I watched those three. I didn't watch Batman Rob. I don't need to, but I did watch those three, and it might have been spawned by Giving Blood and seeing most of Batman Forever or Giving Platelets.
You gotta give Tim Burton credit. Stylistically, it is like, it's like, holy crap, like, look at the costuming from everybody, look at the world, like, it's sure, these characters memorable. Feel detached from their comic book counterparts, but like,
it's like an author getting the license and doing his own take on a Batman. It's not like somebody doing a Batman movie. It's like somebody creating a new Batman series, you know? And it's, I don't know, it's got a consistent style, but it's very unique. So it's like, it's eye catching, but not just cause it's just stupid for the sake of stupid. It's like, no, it all fits a vibe he's going for. Anyway, I like the second movie maybe more than I would have said in that video, I think. Anyway. Chris, what else? Any action figures?
No, I go through my ebbs and flows with it. I recently replayed through. I always need something to do after the kids are asleep. And so recently, it's just been replaying Tears of the Kingdom. And now I want to go, for some reason, I'm going to go back through. I think I had such a good time and go back through and play Breath of the Wild. I haven't replayed that one in a while.
I think that Breath of the Wild is probably going to be a hair, how am I going to word this? It's going to be a hair less replayable because I think there's more fun things to pick up and redo in Tears of the Kingdom. But I think I'll always have trouble separating. In my mind, I'm just always going to put them together and say that if you vote for those or rate or review or whatever, like you don't even have to separate them. You just get them both and play them both because they're great. Amazing games.
Speaking of which, they just announced the cast for the live-action Zelda movie.
Oh, no kidding. Anybody? Well,
they announced Link and Zelda.
Anybody we know of? I don't know. All right. Well, I saw the
actor for Link was in The Haunting of Bly Manor, which was, I don't know if you ever watch those Netflix series by Mike Flanagan, who's a director/writer. They're like horror series. They're really good. Like they're character driven, but also scary, which is like the perfect horror thing can watch.
I've had Netflix of all the things that I steal from you and from other people, mostly you, I have had Netflix the least. So probably like that's not familiar. But I like really campy horror when it's really campy and like slashery and silly on purpose. And then I like horror when it's not. I still like, I don't want to say it doesn't take itself too seriously, but not like Saw or like the gore porn type stuff. It's like if it's a story that happens to be horror, but it's a good story, I take that too.
Yeah, this is more like ghosts and stuff like that, I guess.
A smidge,
but
more,
it's very character. Yeah. It's very character driven.
Excellent.
He has about five different series. There's this one that's a vampire. Great. Oh gosh, good stuff. Oh man, great stuff there. It's called that one's called Midnight Mass. Then there is because the preacher comes. The preacher comes back. Somehow he becomes a vampire, and so he has to have mass at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and so there's just different. Anyway, great series. There's a Haunting of Hill House. That one's one of the best. That's one of the first ones. The Haunting of Bly Manor, also good. The Fall of the House of Usher. I didn't care for that one as much, but
that's
good.
The first name that I've heard. Does it happen to be like the most popular or have a particularly famous actor or something in it?
Mark Hamill's in it.
Okay. That could be why, I suppose.
I do think that one might be one of the more popular ones, which I don't know why exactly.
It's the first name that you've said that I've recognized, at least.
Yeah. I feel like I'm missing one, but they're all pretty good. Anyway, we're very tangential today.
This week, first of all, two things, and it's still very tangential, but it's amusing. I've mentioned the show Psych before, which, again, I don't think you need to watch because it's not an amazing show. It's just a show that hits a lot of, like, my wife and my buttons together. Like, it's our dinner time show. You put on episode, eat dinner, and that's it. But one of my favorite things about that show is the characters in the show will reference like real life actors. Like Val Kilmer is a constant one, and Ralph Macchio, Kenny Loggins. They make these references to like real life people. Somewhere in between the amount that we do John Mulaney, like less than him, but more than John Panette. They make that many references to those people. And one of my favorite things is that those people will eventually do cameos on the show. So like Ralph Macchio is like a failed cop in one episode, or there's an officer in the police station whose name they say constant. His name is Dobson. Is like an officer they reference all the time. It's like, oh, that, you know, Dobson's on the case, where you never see him. In the last episode, in the finale, it's Val Kilmer, like his Dobson. It's just stupid stuff like that. So every time I see Val Kilmer, I'm like, it's Dobson. I don't know who that is. And then Chris, also this week, I needed an activity to do with one hand while I was holding the baby. And so probably the past 2 weeks ago. And so I made a video again, made a YouTube video. I even started another one because I had to get a nice creative outlet that I haven't really had time for in like the past year. But now I do have time. It just has to be one handed. And I'm a more efficient, cleaner video editor and like piece putter together, storyboarder, like faster, more efficient than ever. And for some work things and past experiences, I have forgotten like how to just talk out loud in a microphone when you're not on the other end. So I'm like over project. I feel like I'm yelling at the microphone, and then I'll put it in Audacity to edit the audio, and it'll just be like, Jesus Christ, who's had such a hard time just talking into a microphone from a script. I felt like I was reading my own script and it's in my own voice, and it's like I can't make this sound like me, even though I'm saying it and I wrote it and it feels like something I would write. It was a very strange phenomenon. Whatever part of your brain that skill lives in, whatever little skill I had, it's gone. That needs exercised a little bit. But I did have fun, made a YouTube video.
Just have Austin do the voice for you.
Maybe he is an easy listening guy. Good, clear voice. At the right, what do you call it? It's in the right like frequency. Like it's not too high, it's octave. Not too. Yeah, maybe the right octave. Like it's got a good, clean pitch. Whereas mine, I either get nasally when I'm high or like kind of a rumble in a bad way when it's low. Anyway, I forgot how to, I thought it was stupid. It's like, I just talk to Chris all the time. What if I just pretend I'm talking to Chris and then I'm looking at the screen, I'm talking. And also, I'm just yelling at the microphone. I'm just over projecting for some reason. I don't know why. Anyway, yeah, Chris, let's get to the topic at hand. We're going to revisit the episode Bato of the Water Tribe and what makes this one different.
Just clear. How long we've been talking?
21 and a half minutes about very important stuff. And so we're going to redo Bato the Water Tribe. We did another revisit episode recently about the beach. And in that episode, Chris, who is rather fond of at least the majority of the beach, explained to me and brought me a bit farther toward the light of why the beach is good. The difference with this episode is that neither of us likes Bato of the Water Tribe. I didn't go into it. I just want to warn. I didn't go into it with like an agenda of like, no, I got to convince Chris or he's got to convince. I just tried to clear my brain and watch the episode right now. And that's where I'm at. How about a super short summary, assuming that we'll touch on a lot of the points as we go through our thoughts.
Okay. Super short summary. The Aang, Sokka, and Katara come across the ship. It's a Water Tribe ship. They find out it belongs to Bato of the Water Tribe. They meet Bato of the Water Tribe, which is kind of their uncle figure. Best friends to Sokka Katara's father. He's waiting to meet back up with them just to get a message. Aang intercepts the message. Aang's been getting kind of ignored by his friends in this episode. He starts feeling a certain way about it. He gets the message. He hides it from them because he feels insecure. He wants to... So he doesn't tell them about it. Then eventually they find out Aang confesses about it. They get mad at him. They separate. Zuko is looking for Katara through June, who uses the Shirshu to track her. And then it ends up, ultimately, they defeat Zuko and the Shirshu, and they join back together and they're friends again, and it ends with Katara kissing Aang.
I'm gonna start off with a good thing, Chris. I assume we'll go back and forth. It might be chronological, it might not be, but mine is chronological. I'm gonna start off by saying I enjoy or appreciate the setup of this episode. If you get rid of the conflict that actually occurs because Aang's a douchebag and get to the conflict that it should be all about, which is these kids having to make a really tough choice of we could see our dad or we could do this world saving mission, but our dad, you know what I'm so that should be the crux. And so it's like, I see right from the get go, the potential, like in the opening, I see the potential for a really good kid, but touching dilemma here. And that's the positive in the early going.
I have one. It's interesting. I think this episode is no longer the worst episode to me. Okay. And it might not even be close anymore. Because, you know, the longest time, I would say The Great Divide is not the worst. It's not the worst episode that's really bottled the Water Tribe. Because the characters act in a certain way that seems to contradict their characters and their personalities and stuff like that. Which again, I guess I gotta remember that hey, these are kids. Aang is a kid.
Sometimes kids are weird.
They are. But I always held this as like, this is the worst episode. This viewing, I think there's one specific thing that this viewing really pointed out to me, and I'll build up to it. Until then, I'll point out some of the smaller things.
No, that's too strong.
Some of the smaller things with this episode that I think are really great. Like you said, this is it's a great plot. Like you said, you gotta choose between your responsibilities and choose between your desires and your responsibilities. And that could have been a really good coming of age story if there was kind of focus on that, which there is like some of that in here. But if that was the focus on it, I think it could have been even better.
Yeah. I know if it sounds like, well, obviously they should choose the world saving mission. It's like, okay. But I just watched an episode of The Rings of Power where flipping Gandalf and Tom Bombadil, which case I don't know if you're a Lord of the Rings universe guy. Tom Bombadil is like he's like nature manifest. He's a being. He just looks like a person, but he's like nature manifested as a person, and he lives kind of outside the laws and stuff, but he lives in reality. Anyway, Gandalf, who everybody knows who Gandalf is, was like, well, if I don't go save these little girls, who's going to say there's two little girls that he's like traveling with, little hobbits. And Tom's like, yeah, or the whole world that you are supposed to be saving right now. And Gandalf has like a legitimate conundrum. So if Gandalf can have said conundrum about family versus world, I think that these children could have a pretty solid plot of, can we go see our dad? Or keep going with Aang.
So, not to get distracted again. I only watched, what was it, 10 episodes in season 1 of Rings of Power?
8.
Whatever the number of episodes there is, I watched one less than that. Watched all the episodes except for the last episode.
I would argue that was a pretty good place to stop. Not because I don't like the series, but I can see why you stopped there. And you just, that's fine. I'm okay with the series. It's
like, for some reason, I was just like, I don't need. For some reason, it came to that day of the new episode. I was like, well, I'll get to it. And I get to it. I never got to it.
The second season does now.
Was Gandalf the. Did it turn out that the weird guy who was with the.
The stranger. The bearded guy who essentially fell out of the stars.
Yeah. Was he Gandalf?
That's Gandalf, yeah.
Okay, that's what I was assuming would be Gandalf. All right.
Yeah, and that's it's different than the books, but the idea with the book and the TV show is that his spawning is like supernatural, like he's not of the world, but
okay.
Or not of the natural world. But no, you're fine. The second season was really slow. Like it was the longest 8 episodes ever. But anyway, I digress.
My first point is that. The action's really good in this episode. Like even if it's the Shushu and Appa, but especially the Aang versus Zuko fight in this episode is like really great. Like the choreography and stuff, like the fighting around the whale, there's a storytelling aspect. I love a good fight where there's like a story being told in the fight, like subtextually. And so like in that Zuko and Aang are fighting over the necklace. I love when Aang like gets it, like he grabs it with his foot and then he grabs out the air from his foot and he lands in the whale and he shoots the water up. So I really like the action in this episode.
That's something I hadn't appreciated. I want to go on record as saying, I don't think I ever came away from the Great Divide as being slightly worse than Bato. I am a little higher on Bato now, but I think it's still my second least favorite episode, but I did like the action as well. And I think I forget the proportion of annoying Aang plot to other stuff. I get it misconstrued in my head of how much.
Yeah. All right, what else you got?
I didn't like the fact that they actually did leave because another kid made a mistake. Or that, like that whole plot. I still don't like that plot point of like, yeah, Aang's just being a little shit. And then they kind of reacted maybe not the most intelligent way, but they're kids, like, okay, whatever. And then this is going to be one of those things where Chris is going to say, Sean, why would you focus so much on that thing? But it did bug me. It's like, we get June, who's on this cool Shirshu, and that's great. I like June. I like the idea that they go to a bounty hunter. I think that's cool. I think it's like, hey, it's a fun way to bring in a side character, see a new fun character. They happen to be at the one little convent, the one little monastery that makes perfume. That's where they happen to have all this go down, Chris. That was hard for me to be like, that's how they get around the Shirshu. That it couldn't be like a Sokka stink bomb or yeah, I don't know. That was like a little bit too
true. Ooh, like, a stink. Oh, you know what, Sean? That would have been because even it could have been. Later on in the show, when Sokka reunites with his dad, they create those stink bombs. Could do where Sokka invents the stink bomb, and then later he finds out that his dad has like took his design and like mm-hmm. used it and stuff.
So
and
we haven't, that, but that's like we haven't gotten to that Air Temple episode yet at this point either. Where do they use stink bombs then, or is that way late? No, in that Air Temple episode with the
that's like four episodes from the finale.
I'll say that's qualm level. It wasn't serious. It was just a bit too silly and there could have been bigger. But that does bring me to another thing that I liked, which is they cover a lot of geography in this episode, which is always fun to me. Like there's a fair amount of gallivanting going on. You get the beach, the water tribe tent, the monastery, the forested, some forested area, where they meet up with June, you know, they cover some different territories, and that's usually a bonus to me. So that's a positive. What else you got, good or bad?
So I was trying to look up what the heck is the Shirshu a hybrid of? I know mole is one of them.
Okay.
But one thing that I like about his design is that it reminds me of a German Shepherd. And a German Shepherd is my favorite type of dog. Just with the brown undercoat, or not undercoat, brown bottom, black top, reminds me of a German Shepherd.
I think the Shirshu is a cool design. So I don't know, like a mole, but like in an anteater shape, kind of.
Yeah, must be a mole, an anteater. I was thinking that also, but I can't find what it is. Do you want to look at the anatomy? Whatever. I'll find that. Other thing that I like about this episode is... Okay, I said that. June. It's great being June. There's one very comedic scene that I laughed out loud today for some reason. So after Sokka and Katara gets hit with the saliva or venom or whatever, that paralyzes them. Sokka's like, oh. And like there's fighting going on above them. They're like leaning up against a wall. And Sokka's like, oh, I think I'm starting to get some feeling back. And all this debris falls on him. And he goes, ah. Had his feeling not come back, he just would not have felt it. And then some of the game.
Like when you get a tooth pulled and you're numb at the time and then it hurts later.
Yeah.
Another bad thing for me, and I kind of touched on it previously. I think that they maybe reacted kind of poorly in that Bato. I want to feel like Bato would have steered them a little better before they all literally were like taken, you know, like off and gone. I feel like Bato as an adult should be like, hey, he's a kid. He's some rough stuff going on right now. He made a mistake. Maybe forgive him and stay on the world-saving mission.
Father should be like, did I just leave a 12-year-old alone to himself? Like, I get that he's the Avatar, but you have to leave that 12-year-old by himself.
To go save the world. Well, also, Chris, the counter of that, too, is that that means I'm bringing these two children into the front lines of battle. They could have been with the Avatar. I'm going to take them to war, and that's good. All because a 12-year-old did a 12-year-old thing, albeit, you know, stupid, but like...
He does bring them around at the end.
It does.
But it could have been, there could have been some conversation. He could have nudged them earlier and then fully nudged them again.
Yeah, something could have, and so again, that's the time spent on that in the episode maybe gets misconstrued in my head, but the weight of it as a plot point, it deservedly is like the biggest decision in the whole point of this episode, and it's handled pretty weirdly. And so that's still my biggest negative.
Yeah. All right. My biggest positive.
Oh,
biggest positive. I mean, I don't have that much more great stuff that I love.
I would guess that the action was the big positive, but all right, go ahead.
I mean, I already talked about the action.
I just assumed that was the biggest part that we weren't given any credit to.
Oh, no. Nah. I mean, it's good. It's great. But the biggest thing for me, that for some reason, and this look of the episode really stood out for me, is that, well, I'll ask you this question, Sean. How many episodes do you think are like Sokka-centric episodes that are like I think of Sokka's Master and
the penultimate episode of the season one finale.
Yeah. Yep.
The one with the what the hell is his name? The guy they meet in the air temple. I can't. I've referenced that episode twice. The Mechanist. Thank you. I keep wanting the Danny Pudi fellow. That's, I would describe that as Sokka-centric.
Okay.
I mean, I know it's not solely Sokka, but like several cruxes revolve around him. What else with Sokka? I don't know. I'm gonna hazard a guess at five ish across the whole series, 5 to 6, something like that.
Okay. I think in terms of focalness of a character going through a character arc. Sokka's Master, it's like, it's only Sokka. Everyone else is a side character. Like, that episode is just Sokka. Like, he's the only one that's going through something in that episode, really. And Uncle Iroh's working out shirtless. Mm-hmm. This episode here, I never thought of it before, but it really is really just focused on Sokka. Like, even his character arc throughout. Right, like there's Sokka stuff he gets his own flashbacks. This episode is so much about Sokka becoming a man. Right, we see that flashback of his dad going out to war, and he's like, I want to come with you. Like, I'm strong and I can do it and stuff. And his dad's like, Sokka, like, part of being a man is knowing where to be at the right time. Right, and so he's like, you got to stay here. And so that's that's the dilemma that he's dealt with in this episode, right? He's like, where should I be at? Should I go be with my father and be with him, or should I be with Aang and help him on his way? So that why you get to the end of the episode, and right when they reunite, and Sokka's like, being with Aang is where we need to be at. He didn't go out as, and it's funny because I didn't really catch this in any of my previous watches, because it's pretty subtle. Like, he's not like, dad would say, being a man is being where we need to be at. He just says, being with Aang is where we need to be at. Like, it's kind of subtle, but that's the character arc right there, of being like, no, I think being a man is going to go fight along and be with my dad, but really it's putting that aside and being with Aang and taking him where he needs to go, protecting him. So it's like it's a great arc for Sokka on his way to becoming a man.
First of all, complete credit to you, because it's not something I had really considered as a whole, like the Sokka approach. And then second, you know, sometimes I'll describe something as being like too heavy handed. What we were just talking about a couple weeks ago, where it's like dialogue in the episode was just maybe a little too heavy handed. I can't even think of what we were talking about, but whatever. That's a perfect example of not heavy handed. Like what a nice way to tie that together without just being like, Dad said this, and I think that this right now is like, no, I just like good, crisp, simple delivery. That's beautiful. And no, I hadn't really considered that at all. That's cool.
And it's interesting when you think about Hakoda, right? Like that scene, it makes the scene hit harder in season 3 when Hakoda is talking with Katara. And he's like, Hakoda at that point in time made the decision, should I stay with my family or should I go to war? Like, and he talks to Katara like, I stayed up at night, like aching so hard that it hurt. Like, he felt like his best place, he felt like as a man, the place he was needed wasn't at home, but it was out at war. And so like, you feel that Sokka is, you know, even though he doesn't go to war like his dad did, he's still just as much of a man as his father is. Like, they both made different choices, but for the same reason.
That's awesome. I don't know if I have any additional contributions, good or bad, left. Chris, do you have anything else to glean? Any specifics to glean from this before we...
To go with the Sokka Man stuff, like the ice dodging stuff, because like that's like, oh man, like coming of age, like this to me is like a coming of age Sokka story, and part of that is the ice dodging experiment. And I like the Hakoda's, like, not Hakoda, Bato, the titular character, even though he's not, it's funny, he's not that important.
Not really.
He's important.
They needed,
but he's a device.
Yeah, they needed an additional familial connection because yeah. Mom's dead and Dad's busy. They needed something.
Yeah, he's just a plot device, really.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. I wouldn't change much of he's. He does what he needs to do.
Yeah.
But I like how supportive he is. Like he's like, oh, Sokka, you haven't done your ice dodging? Like, and he like immediately realizes like, oh, it's because we've been at war. We haven't had time to do these traditions that we love and are accustomed to. And he's like, you know what? I'll take you out myself and do it. Like, I just think that's really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. So in the grand scheme of things, you know, before this chat, I would have said it moved me a little after having just even that last point with you that I hadn't considered so much of a good Sokka story would maybe move it up a little more. But I'm going to say not a lot for me. I think some bad writing, and I think that hampers it to the extent that I will be interested to take our next lowest episode, which might be the one with the pirates. I can't remember for sure, but whatever the next list one, I might be interested to go watch that. And like, does it now surpass that episode? Does that episode suffer from some same, like, not great wet writing, but does it have some weight like you've just given this one? I don't know. I'll be curious to see if it, I'm not ready to say that this now supplants that one without watching that one again, but I can see a case.
Yeah. Giving that one the benefit of the doubt.
And then
you rewatch them all, and then they all go up.
They all go up all conveniently together. No, like I said, if we watch that one, we're like, yeah, I see why we liked it better initially, but maybe it just doesn't carry the impact that we managed to find in this one or something. I don't know. But
yeah, I would be curious.
Is that our next lowest one? Let me try to pull it up without taking over the screen that our faces are on that's being recorded.
Maybe we should redo the scores as a revisit.
I'm not opposed to that concept. You know, as we mentioned earlier, if it's been 5+ years, and if you haven't changed or added something else, I think you're. I just don't think you're growing. I don't know how else to say it.
No. I think from a While you're looking that up, you know, I've been trying to put together, and this Kitsune story and looking up different story aspects. Like, if you look at this episode, like, it crosses off so much things about character development and lies you tell yourself and things like that. With regards to just Sokka, the Aang stuff, I can't defend as much. I can only defend the point of saying, like, he's a 12-year-old kid, and it's reasonable to think he would react that way. Some of it's still a little fishy. Yeah. To leave a 12-year-old by themselves. But also,
not the worst writing in the world. I should clarify that. Yeah, it's like the worst thing ever, just relatively speaking. It's clunkier.
Man, I would be curious what my score was and what your score was as well.
I'm still digging.
Other note while you dig, Katara did a really powerful waterbending move in this episode that goes I haven't heard anyone talk about, like, when they're doing the ice dodging test, and Sokka's like, Katara, put much water between us and the rocks or something. And, like, you know, the boat's pretty big. I mean, she lifts the water up about 20 feet with the boat on it and stuff. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a pretty... And, like, this is her season one. This is her before meeting Master Paku. Like, that's a pretty good attack. pretty good move there, Katara.
It's not mind-boggling, but in the context of season one Katara, it's really cool to think, like, you know, there's still additional water underneath it to, like, support, right? She's not, like, having to lift it out of there.
Yeah.
But just the mass of it, it's got to count for something. I found the sheet. Just making sure I can make heads or tails of our work here. Overall. Is this an average? That looks like an average. Okay. So what episode is this off the top of your head? Do you remember?
This is
116.
Go find it. It is Battle of the Water Tribe is episode 15.
15? And what's 14?
14, I think it would have been the fortune teller, but I'm not sure. Yes, it is the fortune teller.
Okay. I was pretty harsh on the fortune teller, so that's pretty low. 11, is that... What's 11? Man, I'm way meaner to a lot of these than you are.
Let's see if I can find
Fortune teller is low, and 11 is low, and those might be the next lowest on average. 42. So 11 and 42.
The freaking episode list, come on.
Okay, yep, 11 and 42. Those are the next two lowest, whatever those are, which I can contribute now that I'm done looking. Avatar.
11 is the Great Divide.
Okay, fair enough.
And 42, so that would be season 3.
Is that the beach?
It's probably the beach.
Okay. No, you have it rated too low to be the beach.
Oh, okay. Oh, it could be the headband.
Could be. That's probably it. Yep, that's probably it. Okay. And so I wonder what the pirate episode, what we've rated that. That's got to be like, is that 7.3? That one can't be very high, can it?
Dang it, I don't know. Episode 42 would be what, episode 12? No, episode
2.
2.
Yeah,
it's the headband.
Yeah, okay. So that one's really close, and the fortune teller is really close, and I can't think of what the name of the one with the pirates is to verify if that one would be. But so,
it's the waterbending scroll.
The waterbending scroll. Because if they all move up, that's really not that interesting. But if things change places, episode 9 it looks like, is the Waterbending Scroll. And that's pretty, you know what, that's pretty low too. It's not quite as low as the Headband or even the Fortune Teller. But it's down there a ways. So, you know, ones that we can look at in the future and see how our opinions shift. Chris, this one.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. You're about to tell me.
Yeah. So 15, I already forgot. This one we said was 15. You gave it a 6.6. I gave it a 7.1.
Holy crap. Oh, so you were better on this episode than me.
Yeah, a little bit. Great Divide, we said, was episode 11. That one you gave a 6 flat. I gave a 5.3. I think, man, Great Divide, so much of it boils down to that in the end, nothing good actually happened. Like, nothing, there was no good moral takeaway. The characters are all annoying. Like, I don't think I'll change it. We'll watch it again, but I don't think I'll change a thing about that.
What was my scores by area?
For Bato?
Yeah.
You did episode 15. You did audiovisual 6. Story, you gave a 7.5. What, a little surprising. And the memorable there, or the X Factor, whatever you want to call it, you did a 5. Okay. I did the audiovisual at an 8, and I'm going to say there's a chance that I was thinking about the same stuff, you know, different sceneries, different vibes, probably the same thing. Story 7, X Factor 6.
Yeah, audiovisual, I have to change. Because of that fight, I think in retrospect, it's a good fight. I would probably change that to like a 7.5.
And that'll bring it up then, heavy, yeah.
Yeah, and then story, and gosh, I think about Sokka so different. Then I thought about Sokka probably a lot more in his character arc since I've rated that episode.
Man, but do you put that in story? Do you put that more, because the story itself is still clunky, do you put that score really in memorable as being like, you know what, good came out of this X Factor, that memorability is Sokka's character arc?
I think structurally wise with Sokka's character arc, it's a good story. I probably honestly wouldn't. But it also said, so like, if I take out the negative stuff about the story, like the plot conveniences of lack of communication and stuff and feelings and stuff, it would probably be like a 8 or something, or maybe 8.5. So add that back in. So I'll probably take story to, where did I have it at before?
7.5. So, I know, like, it's tough to justify.
I would think it's an 8.
The other thing,
on memorable, I'll take it to. So that's still probably. I had a 5 for memorable.
Yeah,
that's probably still. I'll go 5.5.
The other thing is, like, doing these, you know, out of context, out of order, or whatever. You don't really have the, you know, what was my brain thinking? Context of the time, but anyway, I would be. We can do the Great Divide someday, Lisa. I just, unless there's a B plot in there that I'm not thinking enough about, like, could, you know, that could happen. I just, the characters are all so unlikable and the ending is so unsatisfactory.
I don't think there's a B plot in that episode, because it's an A plot that then divvies up, like A1, A2.
They're all there. Up. Yeah, and they're all there. And they're stupid, and I hate it, so I don't see that in changing. I would be more interested to do, like, a Fortune Teller or the Waterbending Scroll or the Headband, right? That next tier of, like, but not, you know, I don't know. Can it overtake those? Can this overtake those?
For me? And then you could also look at episodes that we disagree the most on, that there's the most area there.
I think we already covered the number one.
Yeah.
0.7, disagree. Number two. You know what's funny is number two, heavy disagreement, is the Great Divide, just because I was so much harder on it than you. So that's funny. Well, I don't know if it's number two, but just at a glance, it's pretty high in the differences that we liked. Episode 18. What's 18? Right before the finale.
18 should be the Northern Water Tribe. I'm sorry, the Northern Air Temple.
Okay, I do. That's the one I do legitimately enjoy, and you don't like.
No, it's not.
That's a storm.
No, it's not the storm. Episode 18, you said?
You like it. I don't like it as much.
I think it's the Waterbending Master. It's the one with Katara and Paku.
Okay. You liked that quite a bit more than I did. Anyway, those are fun as well. The Air Temple one is the one that I tended to like more than you. There's not a ton of examples of me liking a ton more than you. Usually it's the reverse, which is fine. But anyway, we'll do that some other time. It's fun to revisit these. I dig it. And Chris, next time, though, when we have a little more time, because I think it'll be a bigger discussion, we'll do beginnings from Korra. Because that's probably our biggest, like, overall divergence.
What do we have for Imprisoned, episode 6?
Episode 6. Why is that name and name ringing a bell? You've got 7-3, I've got 6-6. So that's a, you know, a 0.7. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty big, you know, a lot of our differences are 0.2s, 0.3s, 0.4s. So anytime I'm seeing like 0.7 and above, I'm considering that pretty good size.
Because that's an episode that when I come across, I'm not like, oh, I can't wait to watch this episode. I'm just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I was harder on it than you were, though, for whatever reason. Yeah,
that's the one with the Earthbenders locked up.
But we're parallel in it, which usually tells me, like, so, like, if, you know, you did a 7, a 7.5, and a 7, and I did, you know, a 6, a 7, and a 6, so it's like, we're far apart, but we feel similar. You know, those tend to be validating to me of like, oh, we're weighting things different. But anyway, see, we're about to our next 30-minute marker. So I'm going to say, Chris, final thoughts.
I found a lot of enjoyment watching this episode this time around that I will no longer say the Battle of the Water Tribe is the worst episode. I will feel bad because I hate just agreeing with the masses so easily, but I would probably say that yes, the Great Divide is the worst episode.
Maybe we don't gotta rewatch that one. Thanks for being here, everybody. My name is Sean. That's my friend Chris Ford, aka the Objective Geek of YouTube and Twitter /X/ Blues Cafe. And this has been Avatar The Last Podcasters. I'll put the stuff in the description. Leave us likes, comments, thumbs ups, positive reviews, say nice things to us, click bells, whatever. We appreciate all of it. We appreciate your time and being here. Thanks. We'll see you next time.